Welcome to PFASology with me, Rachel London. PFASology is a podcast where we interview researchers about per- and polyfluoroalkyl substances, better known as PFAS. In the last two decades, there has been increasing attention on these substances from scientists, NGO, and government. Whilst useful, these chemicals have now become widespread contaminants found in most environments and animals on this planet. Many scientists all over the world are working to find solutions to these problems, including a group of early stage researchers, or ESRs, in the project PERFORCE 3. Those of us on this show are all researching and learning about these compounds. In this show, we're going to talk about PFAS, some of the research going on at the moment, and some of the ESRs working on this problem. Each episode, we're going to look at one of the aspects being investigated and share what we are learning about PFAS. We're going to start today's podcast in the shadow of the Black Forest, in the beautiful state of Baden-Württemberg in southwest Germany. It is 2013, and something is wrong. In the small town of Rastatt, a routine check of the town's drinking water has uncovered PFAS contamination. The subsequent investigation would uncover the largest case of PFAS contamination in Germany, in terms of both the area affected and complexity of the contamination. But where was this PFAS contamination coming from? Normally, in cases similar to this, the contamination comes from factories or airports. However, in this case, it was something slightly different. The contamination was found to have originated from agricultural fields. 640 acres, which is roughly the size of 260 football fields, of agricultural fields had been found to be contaminated with PFAS. This contamination was then continuously contaminating the underlying groundwater, with the most recent report identifying an area of 55 square kilometres of groundwater that had already been contaminated. And how exactly did this happen? Well, in 2005 to 2008, farmers had spread compost all over their fields, normally not an issue. However, in this instance, the compost had been contaminated or blended with industrial waste from paper mills. This was contaminated with a complex mixture of PFAS. Ironically, in an attempt to improve the quality of soil in their fields, the farmers had unknowingly spread contamination throughout it. So what is the implication of all this? Primarily, high cost to the local communities. A 2019 report funded by the Nordic Council of Ministers included costs such as new drinking water infrastructure required, ongoing public health programs and monitoring, health-related costs, ongoing monitoring of food produced in the area by the state, a drop of land and property prices in the area, and ongoing costs to the local agricultural economy. These costs are also likely to continue for some time, with researchers working on this case predicting timescales for field-scale leaching up to centuries. This all sounds rather bad, so could we clean this up anyway? Well, yes, there was a report in 2015 that looked into the remediation of this area. However, the predicted costs were 3.5 billion euros. There is a clear need for better soil remediation techniques to assist in cases like this. And with us today to talk about his research in such techniques is Michael Hubert, an early stage researcher in the solutions team of the PERFORCE 3 project. Michael is an early stage researcher working in Norway at the Norwegian Geotechnical Institute. Hello, welcome to the show.
Hey, Rachel. Thank you very much for having me.
We heard in the story a bit about a town, and I understand that you actually are from the area nearby. So you're from Germany and you're from Darmstadt, is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. So I lived and studied in Darmstadt. I studied like environmental engineering, not focusing on PFAS. But what is really concerning actually that while I was studying, I didn't know about this case.
Yeah, I hadn't heard about it either until we started preparing for this podcast. Yeah, so really interesting. If you joined us for the earlier episodes, you'll know that PERFORCE 3 is broken into three different groups. In episode 1, Mohammed talked us through team 1, the analytical team. In episode 2, we spoke to Lars about toxicology. And today we're going to hear about the third, final and best team, in my opinion, the solutions team. Michael, can you tell us a bit more about the solutions team, who is part of it, and what are the goals that we're hoping to achieve?
Yeah, Rich, I'm really glad for this question, actually. And it's really nice that you call our group like kind of the best group. Like the name already indicates, we're looking for solutions, like how can we remediate PFAS contaminated media? And so we heard in Rustchart already that we have like high concentrations of PFAS in the soil, in groundwater. So this is not the only case in Europe. There are like some estimations which indicates that we have around about 100,000 sites like this in Europe where like PFAS is actually like emitted from. And we know from the other episodes already, like PFAS is like a vast family of substances, like there are a lot of substances in it. So this kind of means that it's clear that just one approach is not enough to tackle this problem. The solution group, therefore, in PFAS 3 is very interdisciplinary. So it's the place where engineering, chemical and policy solutions actually come together. And we have 5 early stage researchers and we are looking for different ways to mitigate the negative effects of PFAS. The engineering solution group, Björn and Sane, who are doing their PhD at SLU in Sweden, and myself working for NGI in Oslo. And we are looking into the topic how to treat PFAS contaminated water, soil and building structures. Then we have other approaches as well, which are more preventive. So the question is, how can we address or how can we stop using PFAS in the future, or how can we replace it with safer substances? And there I'm really happy that we have Victoria on our team. She is doing her PhD in Germany at Hochschule Fresenius. And then last but not least, we have you, Rachel. Yeah, so what are you doing in our team?
So I'm the last one in the solutions team, and I will be focusing on environmental chemistry and the policy solutions. First, looking at the assessment of available alternatives. Are there suitable substitutes? And then later, how we can regulate such extremely persistent substances like PFAS. But let's get back to the topic of soil remediation, because that's what this episode is about. How can we manage contaminated soil, which is leaching PFAS into our environment?
So first of all, we have to understand that soil is a very complex medium, actually. So we kind of know that it's kind of a mixture of organic and inorganic compounds. And then again, we have like water in it. We have like maybe a little bit of air bubbles, you know, when we kind of mix it with water. In addition, we have like a lot of microorganisms in there. A lot is happening in soil, but even though it's so complex, we actually already have techniques which can be used, and techniques actually where researchers are working on to make them more efficient or even invent new ones. One technique is easy excavation and landfilling. So this is simply just moving the soil, taking it and transporting it to a landfill, where it will hopefully stay for the rest of the century, the next century, whatever. So you can already see the problem actually, because we were just shifting the problem, and we're shifting the problem in time, and we don't want actually to give the problem to our children. Then another one is soil amendment or stabilization. This means we will add an adsorbent, which is a special substance where PFAS bind to the soil to stop leaching PFAS into the groundwater and finally into our drinking water. Then another one is thermal degradation, where actually we set PFAS on fire. We set the soil on fire, you can call it like this. We can destroy them by this technique at a certain temperature. But there's still a lot of research to be done, like how many PFAS, for example, end up in the smoke which we're generating. And then we have another possibility to treat like highly PFAS contaminated soils, and this is soil washing. And we will talk about this a little bit later as well. And it's what it sounds like. It's basically washing the soil with a lot of water. We're collecting the water. We will try to get the PFAS into the water and out from the soil, and then we can reuse the soil. And then we just have to treat the water as like a final step.
Okay, so there's 4 main types of technique. The first one you told me about was excavation and landfilling, so digging it up and putting it in a landfill. Number 2 was the soil amendment, so you add something, it causes the PFAS to stick to it and it doesn't go to our water. Number 3 was setting it on fire. I love that, so thermal degradation. And then the final one, which we're going to talk about a bit more, is soil washing, where we wash the soil, right?
That's correct. Great summary.
Let's talk a bit more about soil washing. I understand this is what you are looking into in your PhD.
That's correct. And first of all, we have to distinguish a little bit, because they're like different ways of soil washing. We can say that there's in situ soil washing, which means that we actually leave the soil where it is, just like infiltrate a lot of water, collect the water like through a pumping well, for example, and then we have to treat the water. But what we are looking into at the moment in my PhD is the ex situ soil washing, which means that we take the contaminated soil, we excavate it, and then we bring it to a soil washing facility, or What else we can do is like we can build like a small soil washing facility next to a highly contaminated area, and then we kind of process the soil and we want to like wash off the PFAS. In the process of soil washing, the soil is washed with a lot of water, like we said before, and sieved into different size fractions, which are mainly sand and gravel, especially what the industry is interested about as well, because this is building material you can sell afterwards if it's clean enough. When we wash this soil, we end up with like clay and finer particles, which are washed off. And this washed off material must be collected, and then it needs to be dewatered by using filter press to produce, in the end, a less voluminous hazardous material, which then can be landfilled or possibly thermally treated. Like we were talking about this in the beginning, that those are like two options. You call like the thermal treatment firing it up.
Okay, so you're focusing on ex situ, which is where we dig up the soil, we take it to a plant, and then separate it out by size, wash it. We sell the stuff that's clean and valuable, like gravel and sand. Then we take the PFAS that we've washed off, we concentrate it by removing the water, and then we can either landfill it or thermally treat it. So is this already being done in places?
Soil washing in general was used on other contaminants. Heavy metals can be washed off quite good already. We don't have so many soil washing facilities in the world who are washing PFAS from a contaminated soil. So consequently, like we are missing operating data, and we don't know like what is actually the best practice of this technique. So this is what we are focusing on in our work, is that we want to see like how can we make this process more efficient, and how can we actually see if this works on all the PFASs which are around, or like more than just like one PFAS.
In what contamination scenarios would you use soil washing as a remediation technique?
Soil washing is normally used for highly contaminated areas where we have like a local area, like a kind of a local spill of PFAS. For example, at like airports, military bases, or production sites, where we kind of know on this site PFAS have been used in the production or have been produced, or like for military bases or airports, we kind of know where there were like firefighting trails, where they use like firefighting foam. So we have like an area which we know the amount of soil we need to treat.
Would you use soil washing in the case in Rastatt that we discussed at the beginning of this episode?
The concentrations in the Rastatt case in the soil are quite high, actually. But then there's like the problem that 640 hectares is quite a lot of soil. So at least ex situ excavating all of this soil is way too much, and to treat it in a soil washing facility. So I would say in this case, maybe it would make more sense to even, for example, look into soil stabilization, what we will talk about later on as well. And even maybe some ideas like about in situ soil washing, where we just say like, oh, maybe we can like introduce water into the soil and just wash it out and collect it by wells. But this all depends like on the hydrogeology.
What exactly are you looking into regarding soil washing?
We want to see what kind of steps in the soil washing process we can make more efficient. Like we said before, we are missing like operational data, and so we want actually to develop guidelines. So what you have to watch out for in soil washing, so what are the do's and the don'ts. And what we know already is that like soil washing works more efficiently in soils with larger grain sizes, sandy and gravel soils, and we have it's more challenging for peaty and clay soils because we have like slow water flow rates and we have lots of hazardous material to manage after the washing process. We set up in the lab now like two different experiments. And we used, for example, contaminated soil from Oslo Airport, because they used firefighting foam, which had PFAS in it. And first of all, we are looking what kind of effect does like different size of the soil material has on PFAS adsorption, and to see if, for example, parameters like the organic matter content affects like the adsorption rate. Secondly, we are testing different additives called flocculants for their efficiency on PFAS reduction in the washing water.
Sorry to interrupt. What is a flocculant, very briefly?
A flocculant is something actually you add to the water, which binds to all the impurities in the water, like all the fine material which is just flowing around. The particles are aggregating together with this flocculant, and they form flocks. And there's like this point where the flock is so big that it cannot float anymore, and then it will be so heavy that it will just settle down. And that's what we want to reach. We want to actually get all of these fine materials settled, and then we hopefully end up with like clean water phase. And yes, so preliminary data show that we have very high concentration of PFAS like on the small, on those fine materials, on the clays and the silt fractions. Furthermore, really high concentration of PFAS can be found in organic material. And especially in the topsoil layer, we have a lot of organic material from decaying roots. And then another thing we found really interesting in our experiments is that we found like a lot of fine material, which kind of comes from the inside of the gravel, which we washed. If you look into on a microscopic scale on at gravel, there's actually a structured network of fine interconnected pore spaces where like a lot of contaminants can hide and they can travel in, and a lot of fine material can stack. We analyzed this material, and it shows a really, really high concentration of PFAS. Oh, this is really interesting because it's really hard to reach this material because you won't reach it with a normal soil washing setup. We want to reintroduce this material to the environment, so we have to make sure that there's no PFAS leaching out.
And besides your work on soil washing, what else are you doing in your PhD?
So in addition to soil washing, we are looking into the mechanism of PFAS transport in soil and in groundwater. And actually how to predict it using computer models. We want to get like a better understanding of how and to what extent PFAS move and hence spread in the ground. And this is very important because like we have seen in the Rastatt case, we have contaminated soil, it's spreading to the groundwater, and from the groundwater it's getting into our drinking water. So we need to know what are the exact mechanisms, why are PFAS traveling, how are they traveling, and especially like how much time do we have like until, you know, they reach, for example, our drinking water wells. And we just need to keep in mind that for many countries, groundwater is the main source of drinking water. For example, for Germany and for like where Rastatt is located, 65% of the drinking water actually derived from groundwater. So it's very important to make sure that groundwater is protected from PFAS leaching.
So related to that last point, I heard you had a very productive secondment up at SLU in Sweden. For those of you, actually, I don't think we've discussed it yet on the podcast, but as part of Perforce 3, we have the opportunity to do secondments at partner institutes and universities in other countries. And this is one of the best parts of this program, is the opportunity to go to other countries and work with each other on different experiments, ideas, and collaborate. So I think you did some experiments related to this in your secondment in Sweden. Is that right?
That's correct. So I went to Sweden, Uppsala, to SLU last year in October, and I set up glycemeter experiments with Björn. And yeah, it took us 4 weeks, but it was really nice meeting all the people at SLU as well. Like you said before, the secondments are one of the best parts of this whole Horizon 2020 program. But yeah, we set up lysimeter experiments, and I think a lot of people don't really know what lysimeters are, so you can actually imagine it as being like big columns which are filled with contaminated soil. Then they are just sitting in the ground, so on top, the top surface is exposed to the normal weather conditions, so you have like rain and snow coming on it. And then this water will just percolate through the lysimeter, and then it will generate a leachate on the bottom. And this is the leachate we want to analyze afterwards and to see how much PFAS actually came out. We are looking into two different things. And one thing is that we know from other studies that PFAS really like to bind to the soil-water interface. And we talked about this in the beginning. The soil is really complex. We have soil, we have like water in it, we have like air. So all those interfaces are really interesting for PFAS because they just want to stick there. And we want to see in our experiments how does the change in soil moisture or in the water content in our lysimeters, how does this actually change the travel behavior and the PFAS transport. Therefore, we set up additional irrigation systems as well. So we're irrigating our lysimeters in addition to the normal rainfall.
What is the second thing that you're looking into with these lysimeters? Because earlier in the podcast, you mentioned soil stabilization. So is it something to do with that?
So in half of the lysimeters, we added soil amendments to see if we can stop PFAS from leaching out from this contaminated soil into the lysimeters. This is important because, for example, soil washing, which seems to be economically feasible, will reduce the amounts of PFAS in the soil significantly, but maybe not to such a low level that we don't have any leachate into the groundwater. And we know that environmental agencies set very low regulatory limits for reusing soil. Additional soil amendment, which we add into the soil, could help us to stop this problem and kind of to reuse the soil in the environment. We are at SLU now testing different biochars. Biochars are chars which are produced from biological products, like, for example, burning coconut shells. Or what we have done now, we equipped our lysimeters with one biochar produced from timber waste and another one which was produced by burning sludge waste, which was contaminated with PFAS before. So this brings us back to our starting story, the Rastatt case, where this sludge was the evil of everything in the beginning, you know? And we are interested, especially with sludge biochar, we are in different things. One of it is, how much of the original PFAS can we get rid of by burning it? Or do we end up with byproducts from the burning process? And in addition, we want to look into if this actually works as soil amendment, like as biochar, like, which we add into the soil where the PFAS gets absorbed to. And we will expect the first results in spring this year, where we hopefully will analyze the first water samples after the snow melt season and all of this. So definitely stay tuned for this outcome, because I'm really excited about it, because if this works, this means that we can actually decrease PFAS concentration in organic matter in sludge by burning it, and then reuse this material as a soil amendment to stop PFAS leaching from soil. So it's a win-win situation.
Great. Thank you so much for talking to me today and telling me all about soil remediation.
Thank you very much. See you maybe on another episode again.
Thank you very much to Michael Hubert for joining me today from the Norwegian Geotechnical Institute. Today we talked about soil remediation for PFAS-contaminated soils, in particular his research in soil washing, PFAS transport in soil, and soil stabilization. I hope you enjoyed this episode, and if you did, follow us on Spotify, Twitter, or ResearchGate, or visit our Perforce 3 website at perforce3-itn.eu. We're also really new to this, so we'd love any feedback you have for us, so feel free to message us on Twitter or rate us on Spotify. I hope to see you next episode, and I'll be talking to Lara, who's based up in the Arctic, and she'll be telling me about PFAS in blood. The PFASology podcast was produced and created by the PhDs of Perforce 3. Today's episode featured and was written by Michael Hubert and Rachel London. Our thanks to Professor Hans-Peter Arp and Lars Bruken for reviewing the script. This podcast was edited by the Perforce 3 researchers, Mohammed, Laxon, Melanie and Odney, and was published and promoted by Faeza, Lara, Lars and Sylvia. This project has received funding from the European Union Horizon 2020 Research and Innovation Programme under the Marie Skłodowska-Curie Grant, agreement number 860665. All views expressed belong solely to the authors and do not represent the views of our funders. This episode was hosted by me, Rachel London. This has been PFASology. Thank you for listening, and please join us next time.